Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Cinephiles fans, and welcome to our continuing Oscar series here, where my co-host Steve Morris and I dive into one Best Picture nominee leading up to our live Cinephiles Awards presentation here on March 1st, Saturday, March 1st, where we count down, where we hand out the awards for these categories that we picked out from the Oscars, and you all, as listeners and as fans of the Cinephiles, you vote on these, so this is your voice for all of these rewards. And today we're here to talk about I'm Still Here, but first let's check in with Steve. Steve, are you still here, and how are you doing, brother?
I'm still here, and I'm super excited about the Cinephiles Awards. We have had so many people who are voting. The ballots are available on patreon.com/thecinephiles. You do not have to join one of the paid tiers. It doesn't cost a dime. You could just join the free tier. That'll give you access to the ballot, and you can vote. And it's been super exciting seeing all these votes come in and so many more people joining the Cinephiles community. So I'm very excited about our upcoming award show.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what's going to win in the different categories and how those are going to line up to what end up being the winners at the Oscar ceremony, which is the next day. So I'm very excited to compare those. And maybe we do a short afterwards comparing those in March sometime.
Absolutely. It's a great idea.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. All right. Well, today we're talking about I'm Still Here, this Best Picture nominee from director Walter Salles, who, for some of you may remember, did Central Station, which got a lot of great reactions and reviews. It got two Academy Award nominations back in 1998. It also introduced Fernanda Montenegro to a lot of people, who is still acting nowadays. He also did Behind the Sun, The Motorcycle Diaries, Dark Water, and On the Road. And so this is his most recent entry here, and this is based on a true story, a memoir from Marcelo Rubens Paiva. I hope I'm saying that right. And it stars Fernanda Torres, who has been nominated for Best Actress for her performance, and Fernanda Montenegro as Eunice Paiva, because that's her later on in the movie. She's a mother and an activist coping with the forced disappearance of her husband, who is the dissident politician and architect Rubens Paiva, played by Celton Mello during the military dictatorship in Brazil. This film came out and was the target of an unsuccessful boycott in Brazil by the far-right faction in Brazil, which denied that their regime was a dictatorship during that time. But the film went on to do really well, $26 million on a $1.5 million budget, and it became the highest-grossing Brazilian film since COVID. So, Steve, what are your thoughts about this 2-hour and 20-minute movie that dives into a period of time when the far-right Brazilian military regime was in control of the country?
It's funny. We've been talking about a bunch, the difference between, you know, what I call, you know, the best movie or your favorite movie. Mm. And this is a different category to me because this is an important movie.
Yes.
This is a movie that has important things to say that I really think everybody should see. Because of course, I knew about disappearances. I knew it, you know, in all sorts of countries where you hear there's the dictatorship and 1,000 people disappeared and 10,000 people disappeared and, you know, and all these things. And I knew about those things. Right. But what this movie did was humanize it in a way that I had never experienced. And part of it, I think, and one of the most amazing things about the film, it just felt so real and human. This family that you met, felt 100. I've never been to Brazil. I've not, you know, like, but it felt 100% real. Mm. Like, this felt like a real family. And to watch a really real family go through this horribleness and how they did it. And in particular, Fernanda Torres's performance was stunning. And I really didn't know. I knew just generally what the movie was about, but I didn't really know that it was her story. So when the so as the movie is going along, and the dad is disappeared, And then I start to realize, like, oh, no, this is her story. Because she's somewhat in the background for the first 10 or 15 minutes of the film. And then I went, and then as I watched her, I was like, oh, I'm watching a truly, truly great performance on her part. Yeah.
I mean, this obviously being the son of South American immigrants and hearing the stories from my family, not just my parents, but my my extended, my uncles and aunts and on both sides of my family, and the experiences they had in multiple countries in South America as they were growing up, moving and what have you, until they ended up in the States. A lot of this, as you said, felt very familiar. Remember that song, I think it was Fragile from Sting off his second album, which was talking about Pinochet and his disappearing of generations of young men under his regime and all of that. So there were things that were familiar, as you said, Steve, which was great of you to point out, that I read about and heard about and what have you. But I knew nothing about this particular story. I knew nothing about this particular time in Brazil's history. So for me, all of this was supremely eye-opening. And you make an excellent point that Fernanda was kind of a little bit in the background, as mothers sometimes are when they're running a successful family, is they're in the background because the needs of their kids, the needs of their husband, especially I think at this time in 1970 in Brazil, he was her husband was a former politician, a state senator, I think. And so you recede in the background because you're the spine of the family. You want to make sure everybody is getting their things are being met. And so when the father leaves or gets taken rather, that's when the mother kind of takes center stage. And the same thing happened with my family. Like when my dad passed away from cancer, my mom all of a sudden became someone that was much more forceful, much more clear about things, led our family, was there as a counsel in ways that she'd never been before because my dad had kind of filled that role. It was fascinating. So to watch a little bit of that happen here through this situation, I thought was incredible. But just so great to point this out, Steve. The film is so smart to give you, what do I always say? You got to give me layers to all the ensemble characters so I can care about the overall story and I can care about what happens to them. So the way the film brings all the different kids to life and the way the film brings their life to life before he's taken, you know, by the beach and they are into arts and they're into movies and the politics and the sports. Like it's a very vibrant family. It's a happy family. They have they have parties, they're drinking, they have all this kind of stuff. You have to have that. So when you see the way the regime comes in and shuts it down, and really symbolically when they come into the house and shut all the curtains, in essence, shutting out all the light, shutting out knowledge, shutting out intelligence, shutting out dissension, that's what they're doing. You see the film take on, as you said, Steve, an importance, a resonance. And God damn it, if I didn't feel what's happening, what I think is happening now, happening in that movie. And this is the second film about disappearances with Emilia Perez that's nominated for Best Picture this particular Oscar season, you know?
It really hit very close to home in a lot of ways. Yeah. And one of them, and I just have to admit, my ignorance, my biases, my preconceived notions about things, which is in hearing about stories about disappearances in these countries, an image had been created in my head of who was getting disappeared. Mm. And it wasn't based on anything, but it wasn't this family. It was like, you know, it's like, oh, it's revolutionaries and it's young people and it's you know, it's not criminals, but people that are like outside of the normal society. I had no reason that was the image that was in my head, but that was what was in my head. And then I see this family and frankly, they reminded me a lot of my own childhood. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because they are well-educated, sophisticated people who have some money, who have wide ranges of friends, who are interested, all sorts of people. And so when they're having those parties, and it's like, I'm a little bit younger than this, but not that much younger than this. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, I was a little kid in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And so it looked like the Silbersteins and the Rosens and my parents' best friends all having a big party and they have glasses of wine and they're discussing art and literature and politics. And that's where I grew up. So seeing that is the family that is the victim of this disappearance and of this terrible government, it really hit close to home. And I completely agree with you. They gave, particularly to the eldest two daughters,
yes,
but a lot of the other kids as well, like you really, they are kids living their lives the way kids live their lives.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like one of them's going to travel off to Europe and is a fan and takes pictures at Abbey Road and, you know, all those things that are just like the things that kids do. And then this cataclysmic, unexpected, not understandable, completely unexplained event flies into their lives, and now they have to survive.
Yeah.
You know, and now she has to lead the family, and the quiet strength and the choices that she makes in order to, and the incredible, just the moment that she has to go to the bank to get some money and she can't get any money because she needs her husband to sign on the thing and her husband, and she can't say, well, my husband's been disappeared by the government. She can't say that.
Right.
So she, there is no way for her to get money. I'm just like, and not that that's the biggest tragedy of the movie. Obviously there's much more horrible things going on, but just the like, fuck, how do you do that? How do you talk to your kids? What do you do with your kid? And that, I mean, it's just really, really was powerful.
Well, and you have to be aware of this, and you have to be a student of history when you look at these kinds of things, and which is why I feel like, as you said, Steve, there's really real world resonance to what we're experiencing. Dictatorships don't come on and then all of a sudden they're in control. They systematically remove the avenues you would have to contradict them, to question them, to look over them, and they make you afraid to contradict them because of what the results may be. And we see this with Eunice, because she, Eunice, however they say it, I'm sorry for anybody who knows how to pronounce it correctly, but it's been a bit since I saw the film, but like she gets tortured just for asking questions about where her husband is, right? And then she has to, and then there are moments where she is like trying to limit the information that the kids get, because as a mom, she has to be aware that she doesn't want to have her kids completely despondent. And so, but she tells more to the older daughters because they can take more. So it's those kinds of things where she is navigating the situation at home as strongly as she's trying to navigate the situation outside of the home to find out what happened to her husband. So she has to grow in importance as the film goes along, grow in strength as the film goes along. And she endures a lot of stuff in the process of all of that, because they set up the system as a dictatorship to make it very hard for you to question things, you know? And we see now what's happening, where they're removing all these roadblocks and remove what they're calling roadblocks, which are people who oversee, impartial people who are overseeing avenues of dissent that you can take, and that is dangerous. That's a dictatorship. You can study any dictatorship. That's exactly what they do. They remove people from positions of power and departments that they want to take control of. They put only loyal people in charge of those departments, and they disband any oversight over their existence and label them as enemies of the state. So this is what we see happening, and it's fucking heartbreaking. And exactly what you said earlier, like, you never, why would these people be taken? But that's exactly who they go after, is the rich cultural elite who might be intelligent enough to contradict them and question them and influence other people to question them as well, because they have standing and they have status. And so this film is chilling in a lot of ways, as well as heartwarming, because you're watching how strong Fernando Torres's performance is as Eunice.
I mean, the quote, "the price of liberty is eternal vigilance," is one that I think we need to remember. And obviously, you know, people don't always like it when we get political on this show, but this episode is about this. And I was just listening to, you know, people are talking a lot about a constitutional crisis, and are we in a constitutional crisis? And we'll get back to the movie, but I feel this is important in terms of what this movie is about.
Yeah.
I was listening to the National Constitution podcast, which I like a lot because that's the kind of nerd I am.
Yeah.
And they were discussing this, and one of the scholars, who is a conservative, by the way, said, the thing you have to remember about a constitutional crisis is there is no one moment. It is a progression. There is a slowly, as he said, yes, there is a certain thing that would absolutely say that we're there.
Yeah.
But what it really is, it's a progression of things going along the way. And as you said, is that we live in a nation that is based on checks and balances, and it's based on limiting power in all of these different ways, because the founders of the framers of our Constitution didn't trust humans.
Yeah.
They said humans are going to try to increase their power, so we have to check it. And when you get rid of a bunch of those checks, it's scary. Yeah. You know, and what happens in this, and as you say, in this film, it is the people that are educated and have resources that can stand up.
Yeah.
And that's one of the interesting ambiguities within the film is we don't know 100% what the husband was or was not doing.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
It seems like he maybe was doing something
right
in terms of working against the government, but that's what he's essentially a former congressman. He's a well-known person who has views that oppose the government. It's perfectly natural for him to be in contact with the opposition, but to what degree we never get to know. And she never gets to know as far as I know.
Yeah.
Like it's within this realm of some people without identification suddenly show up at your house and say, we have to talk to your husband.
Yeah.
And the scene where he drives off is just, and you don't know that's going to be the last, I'm sorry to spoil this part of the movie. It's fairly early in the movie, but that's the last time you're going to see that guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And how that affects the family in so many ways and what they have to do. And, you know, they're the lucky ones because they have resources. They have places they can get to. They have where they can go, you know, because they end up making a decision later on in the film. And so there are opportunities for them, but they still endure so much in navigating the loss. But I have to say, I mean, Fernando Torres' performance is incredible, Steve. I do want to focus on the acting here. I think her navigating these situations, navigating what goes on in the movie, how she speaks to her children in certain moments. And at times it kind of throws you back a little bit because you're like, wow, she's so hard. Like when she's ripping the letter out of her daughter's hand, there's certain moments where you're just like, oh my God, you know, and how she's doing it. But you have to understand she's doing it from a place of care and affection and wanting to make sure their children navigate it as strongly and as best as they can. And I saw I read a really interesting comparison because they were trying to say, is she a police state herself in her home? And I thought, wow, that's a fascinating thing. But I don't want to say there's a thing as a benevolent dictator because I know that's like an oxymoron, but certainly she cares about her children. Her limiting the information is from a place of care because the ultimate goal is for them to be able to function in society and be safe, right? What the far right regime is doing there is coming from a place of fear, a fear of being questioned, a fear of being asked about this, a fear of being contradicted or an anger at it. And so they're trying to limit information so that no one questions anything they do or calls them out or exposes them because they know what they're doing is wrong. They know what they're doing is wrong, but they're going to do it anyway. And I think that's the difference when I look at the comparison, which I thought was a really interesting.
I want to make sure I understand this comment. There are people that are comparing her ruling of her family as the mother with the regime that is kidnapping and torturing and murdering people?
But is controlling the country and claiming to be doing what is best for the country. Do you know what I'm saying? And so it's
sense
of it. No, I'm not saying I agreed with that. I'm just saying I thought it was an interesting avenue to walk down. Yeah.
I think this is an interesting conversation too, but I think that is complete whacked out bullshit as far as I'm concerned. If you're a fucking parent, you are the dictator. I have this conversation with my son all the time we do not live in a democracy, that he is a child and I am the adult responsible for him. And she's dealing with some heavy fucking shit and she has to decide what do I tell my children about the probable torture and murder of their father while we're being watched by the government. And I had already been taken away and tortured. They took one of my daughters away for 24 hours. Right. Like this is the idea. Well, this is, I think, it's another conversation, but like, I think we've gotten to this totally weird place where we're no longer clear on what is a fucking crime what is a choice. You know, like there are all sorts of things that people might do and you might go like, hey, I didn't like that choice. I don't think they should have done that.
Yeah.
But to compare it in any way, shape or form to a government kidnapping, torturing and murdering its own citizens in secret is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, these days, it feels like we're on constant alert, protecting ourselves from red flags, toxic relationships, scam artists, and emotional parasites. But What if instead we devoted some of that energy to identifying green flags, nurturing relationships, partners that have your back, and communities that leave you feeling stronger, not depleted? Of course, sometimes the signs can be tough to read, and often we get so lost in our own troubles, we fail to appreciate those people and relationships that are truly healthy for us. And that's where therapy comes in. I know for me, it helped me see more clearly the people who aren't just interested in what I can do for them, but who love me for who I am. These are the folks who have always been there for me, and I'm going to do everything I can to be there for them, because while finding a red flag might help you avoid pain, when a therapist helps you find a green flag, it's like discovering a treasure you never knew you had. BetterHelp gives you access to a network of more than 30,000 credentialed therapists with a wide range of specialties, which means you've got a good chance of finding the perfect therapist for you, which in a way is its own kind of green flag. Discover your relationship green flags with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/cinephiles today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/CINEFILES. John, did you know that your actual age might not be the same as your biological age? I mean, it's not just about your birthday. Your body could be a little bit older, could be a little bit younger than what you think. And that's where True Diagnostic comes in. With their True Age test, you can discover your true biological age, plus get insights into things like your risk for heart disease, Alzheimer's, and even early mortality. And the best part, it's all done from the comfort of your home. No prescriptions, no lab visits. It's just a simple test sent right to your door.
Yeah, Steve, that's why I was so excited when True Diagnostics said they wanted to come on and sponsor us here on The Cinephiles. You know, you and me both talk about our health, and certainly people listening to us, they're very aware of their health as they get a little bit older, and you want to kind of stop things from coming or be more aware of what might be coming. And True Diagnostic has a thing called True Age Test. And in that True Age Test, you can find out so much about the age of your body, which helps you. So I was very excited when I got my True Age Test recently from True Diagnostic.
And the cool part is, this is not guesswork. The True Age Test is based on peer-reviewed research from scientists working at Harvard, Duke, and Yale. I mean, this is real science that you can trust. So think about what it would be like to know exactly how your lifestyle is impacting your body. True Diagnostic makes it easy to get started, offering simple, actionable insights that you can use right away. This is your chance to take control of your health and get the bigger picture. Don't leave it to chance. True Diagnostic helps you understand not just where you're at now, but where you're headed.
All great points, Steve. All right, Cinephiles fans, are you ready to find out your biological age? Right now, our listeners can get 20% off their entire order at truediagnostic.com by using the code CINEPHILES at checkout. That's True Diagnostic, TRUDIAGNOSTIC.com. Just use the code CINEFILES to save 20%. Plus, if you subscribe, you'll get an additional 20% off the 50% discount. Discover your true age today. Well, and I think what's great about the film, though, is that she takes an active interest, not just in navigating her family through this crisis, because people do have to navigate through these situations. I think people are doing it now as we're seeing so many people losing their jobs and getting fired for one person's ego. They're all getting, or two people actually, getting fired and losing their jobs. And they're having to, and it's not a, well, we're only going to pick the people that voted for us. It's a culling. And the culling is affecting people's paychecks. It's affecting people's livelihoods, families' livelihoods. And they're having, for lack of a better term, a come to Jesus moment about all of this and trying to navigate what they do next. Where can they find a job? How will they be able to pay rent? Will they be able to afford their homes? Will their kids have to drop out of, like, there's a college? There's all kinds of stuff that I think families are navigating now with what's happening. And it's really unsettling. So her reaction, not only just to navigate her family through, but to also, as we find out, take steps to make herself more aware of what's happening and make her more of a formidable force down the road beyond her house. She extends her strength outside of her house by going, I don't want to ruin it, but making a decision to do something else with her life, which I think
she becomes a hero. Yeah. We're trying not to spoil these films. This is actually a true story,
right?
You know, about historical incidents. And so I think that shows tremendous heroism. It also, to me, to some degree, would be one of my criticisms of the film, okay, is that the leaps forward in time,
yeah,
are ones where I understand why they're there, but the drama steps down, particularly on the last one for me,
yeah,
you know, in ways that are why I would not say that this should be Best Picture. Mm-hmm. But that being said, it's like the choice. I mean, this is a true hero, this person that they're, you know, whether or not the dad was also a hero, I think it seems like he probably was.
Yeah,
to agree. She carries on the fight, not just to protect her family, but to mm-hmm. get justice. And I also think it's just important, just based on what you were saying,
yes,
of like the, and it relates to, you know, me calling out my own preconceived notions and that they were mistaken, is that our ability to judge quickly on important issues like whether or not someone is a traitor or whether or not someone should be fired, is shitty.
Yeah.
And there is a reason why there are bureaucratic steps that are supposed and judicial steps that are supposed to be going yes. through, because we're all flawed in our perceptions, you know? And so and proceeding on flawed perceptions, particularly when it comes to really big things like arresting, torturing people, or just firing them, has major, major consequences that are negative and will continue to be negative down the line.
I agree. And I don't want to jump into that. What did you think of the directing here by Walter Salles? What did you think of the music here? I thought for Moore and Ellis, which was, I thought, fantastic. And the cinematography by Adrian Tejedo. What did you think of this?
You know what I've realized in doing these Oscar shows with you? I don't really, if I just watch a movie once, I really don't track the music.
Oh,
I really don't. Like if I'm watching it for the cinephiles and I'm focused, or I've seen the movie more than once, then I do. But if I'm in the movie, I can't tell you, I actually don't remember the music. I can't tell you what it was like. So I have no opinion on that. I think it was beautifully directed. I think and in particular, the world building, my sense of every single one of those characters. I think the youngest two sons, maybe knew the least. But everybody else, I really understand. And the feeling of tension that was maintained with almost no exposition in this movie. You're just kind of watching everything transpire.
Yeah.
And the reality of this family, I was totally convinced by. So I think he does a beautiful job directing. And it's funny, it's this conversation we've had a little bit throughout this process, is it spectacular directing? In other words, can you point to the incredible camera movement and the, no, it's not that kind of movie. It's you're just in this world that feels completely real. And that's super hard to do.
I agree. I thought the direction was so confident and he so empathetic and touching, what he was able to do in telling the story without removing the stakes. He didn't go with the mustachio twirled villain. Do you know what I'm saying? This was a very real, potent villain or antagonist that they presented in the film as a contradictory thing to the heroism of Fernanda's performance and the heroism of her character of Eunice. And so I thought that was a great job in the direction and the way he starts initially. Everything is bright and happy and the sun and the lights and all this kind of stuff. And as the film progresses, it becomes much more dour and darker and the rooms are dankier and the clothes are to reflect more of this sadness that is happening. So it's a smart kind of subtle change that you notice. And then like all these vibrant colors, because you do think of Brazil, like this vibrant country, get really muted through the process until they come back out the other side later on in the film. So it's an interesting decision for that. But I suppose I should admit that I went into the film wanting to hear the music that Warren Ellis was going to do, because he was in collaboration with Nick Cave, and they did The Proposition, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford, which is one of my favorite soundtracks. And we certainly did it here on the show. He also did The Road with Nick Cave and Hell or High Water and Wind River. So those are some really interesting scores that I thoroughly enjoyed from him and Nick Cave. So I was looking forward to seeing because he's only done like, I think, 5 or 6 solo scores. And I thought he did a fantastic job because he's not Brazilian, you know, but he brought some really interesting music to this, the film overall. Well, we should wrap up here by talking about the film's potential Oscar chances. Do you see Fernando Torres pulling a upset here and beating possibly Mikey Madison or Demi Moore, who I imagine are the front runners for Best Actress? What do you anticipate from the Oscars here for them?
So I doubt it. I think, you know, again, I always put a warning on my predictive abilities, but I doubt that she could pull that upset. But if she did pull that upset, I would not be upset.
Agreed.
You know what I mean?
Agreed.
Like, because I think it's an incredible performance and worthy of recognition. But I can't. And it's funny, too, when you think about particularly these top three, Demi, Mikey, and Fernanda.
Yeah.
It's like, what completely different kinds of performances?
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, you don't think it'll win Best Pictures, you said, but what about Best International Feature?
I haven't seen them all,
okay,
but I would certainly would be happy. I mean, I think it's, you know, and I would just jump into my final thoughts, I suppose, which
please.
is that I'm going to go back to where I started. This is an important movie,
yeah.
And this is a movie that you should see, because I think the one of the things that is so important and this power that movies have maybe better than anything else is that they can make you feel deep empathy for people in a situation that you have never, ever been in.
Yeah.
And that kind of deep empathy can change the way that you want to exist within the world and the way you want your government to exist in the world. Because one thing we should say, and I don't know about the U.S.'s relations with Brazil at this time, but I certainly know there are a whole bunch of countries that were disappearing their citizens that the United States was supporting. And so so seeing a movie like this might change how you feel when our country is, you know, we're still the most powerful country in the world. And if we maybe are friendly with dictators who do this kind of thing, then that's on us. And so that's why I think this is a very important film to watch.
That's a great point. I think this is I agree. It's a very important film to watch, but it's also incredibly well done.
Yeah.
I think the 2 hours and 15 minutes zip by, which I can't always say about a 2 hour and 20 minute movie about a subject like this, about a real life topic like this, and a historical film like this, but I think it zips by because of the performances, the direction, the writing here as they're adapting the memoir, and the storylines that are, and the score, I think, that puts you in the, like, the emotional state that you need to be in to experience what's happening. And we're moving in this film constantly. And so I think that also keeps the feeling of it being a little slow or whatever away from this film. And I think it packs a hell of an emotional punch by the end. I hear you about the jump. I hear you about that, but I do think it still works. Maybe not as strongly as if it had been, you know, followed through in a way that I think you were hoping to see. But I still think it leaves you with a lot to consider and think about after the film is over. And I think it is one of the best films of the year. So I got no problems with this being nominated for Best Picture. All right, well, there you go. That's our thoughts on I'm Still Here. Let us know what you think. You know, we put these up on the Patreon. We put these up there for you all to listen to. Just let us know your comments, thoughts, and questions about this film, because we always love to hear from you all. And, of course, thank you so much for supporting us here with the Patreon on The Cinephiles and in other ways that you support us by listening to us, but also by maybe subscribing to some of the sponsors and clients that sponsor our shows. We would appreciate that as well. Steve, anything more to say as we wrap up?
Well, just that we want your vote. We want to hear, not only can you do we want to hear your comments, but we actually want to hear, maybe this is your vote for Best Picture. And the only way to put that vote out is at patreon.com/thecinephiles. Join the free tier, and you can vote in our very first Cinephiles Award show, which is coming up on Saturday, March 1st.
All right, there you go. Thank you all so much, and we'll talk to you next time with another brand new installment of the Oscar series, looking at the Best Picture nominees for 2025 Oscars here on The Cinephiles.